Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. For all the links mentioned on the podcast, be that book recommendations, other websites, specific products, all that kind of stuff, you can find them at downtimepodcast.com. Just find the episode that you're interested in and it'll be in the show notes. While you're there, we've got a subscribe page that will help you subscribe to the podcast and also to our newsletter. Subscribing is free and it means you'll get each episode delivered to your device as soon as it's available. Not all of our episodes are available on other websites, so if you want all of our content, then subscribing is the way to go. If you want to become part of our growing club of supporters, then you can head to downtimepodcast.com/shop and get yourself a t-shirt, sweatshirt, hoodie or a mug. It's all top quality, ethically sourced, and it's now shipped without the use of any plastics. What's even better is that shipping is free worldwide on orders over £30. All the proceeds go back to helping keep the podcast growing, and a massive thank you to everyone who's already brought something. Also, give us a follow on social media by searching for Downtime Podcast. All right, in this week's episode, I'm going to be talking to Ollie Pepper, one of the founders of Morvello Clothing. Morvello are a small bike clothing brand based in Brighton on the south coast of the UK. I've been wearing Morvello gear for about 8 years now, and I've always loved the fact that they're doing things a bit differently from a lot of the big players. We sit down to chat about how the company came to be, what it's like competing against the big dogs in the market, their view on mountain bike clothing and how they see it developing, along with much more. Morvello have very generously set up a discount code for you, the Downtime listeners. All you need to do is head to morvello.com/MTB. That's Morvello, spelled M-O-R-V-E-L-O, and use the code Downtime, all one word, all uppercase, at the checkout to get 25% off all full price clothing. This code runs until the 31st of May. So head to morvello.com/MTB and check out what they have to offer. You can also follow them on Instagram at morvellomtb. All right, it's time to get into it. So without further ado, here's Ollie Pepper. Ollie Pepper, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for taking time out of your hectic schedule and sitting down for a chat.
It's a pleasure.
Cool. Set the scene for us. Where are we?
In my house in Brighton, because the Morvello office will just be too noisy. There'll be two dogs running around and probably people swearing and stuff like that. So we just, yeah, it'd be better at home.
You know? Nice. Cool. And I can hear the seagulls in the background.
Yeah, it's a good seaside, you know, near the beach.
Yeah.
Like living in Brighton, so you've got the hills one side, beach the other. Yeah, good. And nice and sunny, which makes a nice change.
Yeah, compared to last week. Cool. Tell us a bit then. Let's go back to the start. Tell us kind of a little bit about where you grew up and then how you got into riding.
Well, I grew up in Birmingham, as you can tell by my thick Brummy accent. And so quite flat. I just got into it the usual way. You know, I'm in my 40s now, so BMX in the 80s, like a lot of people, I guess. And then mountain bikes came along and I was kind of quite curious about those. And I got a mountain bike, you know, it's like an old Apollo that was just, I thought I just got it because other kids had got bikes. And then I actually went out for some friends who are into climbing. They use their mountain bikes to go to this climbing spot near Derby. Uh-huh. And so I went with them and I was just like, this is amazing. It's just like these bikes are just like, you know, properly go off road, and then this is great. And then needless to say, the Apollo died after about two rides, you know, but it got me hooked. So I was just then got properly into, this is like kind of early 90s, like proper into cross country, you know, because that's all there was, mountain biking, and then doing classic Midland races around the corners of fields and stuff. Like you look back on it, it's like really dull racing, but you know, and then one local race tried to liven it up by putting like literally a door on some bricks, you know, old school kind of like, and then broken collarbones later, they kind of took that away. But then that kind of, yeah, cross country racing, then went to university down south. So went down to Portsmouth University.
Okay.
And then got involved in, picked back up BMX again, South Sea Skate Park.
Yeah.
And then got into like dirt jumping and downhilling and things like that, really. So kind of the early days of things like, you know, Spooky Metalheads and the Zonics, and, you know, we just single speeded everything, took the front brakes off, I was riding brakeless BMX, and, you know, you're kind of like early 20s and you're young and you're reckless and you're willing to do stuff where I definitely wouldn't do it now. So yeah, like did some downhill racing, you know, the downhill racing of old, which is essentially like a cross-country downhill race. And then it just morphed back into single speed mountain biking, then back into cross-country and 24-hour racing. And then it's gone back into, yeah, kind of like, I don't know what to describe it now. I mean, you might say trail, enduro. It's essentially just mountain biking.
Just riding a bike.
Just riding a bike off-road.
Yeah.
You know, I still love it all, really. Jumps, like just heading out, but I still like, you know, jumps and berms and trips to trail centres. But I just like just riding around Stanley Park, which is nearby, which, you know, isn't technical really in any way, but still fun.
Nice. So. Yeah, so still riding a lot then.
Yeah, like every day, like ride to work every day. And in the summer, that's normally on a mountain bike. And in the winter, it's normally on a road bike. Cause it's just, I get to work covered in slop.
Cool. And so you're at uni in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Is it? And what did you study?
Illustration.
Ah, okay.
Which Dave, my business partner, Morvello, constantly takes a piss out of me for because I'm a terrible drawer. I really wanted to do graphic design, but I ended up on an illustration course.
What led you down that path then?
I was just always interested in drawing or design, I guess, really. And then always interested in bikes too. But design was just, I don't know, just kind of felt like art was, you know, an art design course was a way for me. I just really enjoyed it. And that was the thing I was, you know, least bad at.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think I was kind of more capable at that. Yeah. So,
illustration back then, was that digital based or was it kind of pen and paper based?
Just start of, you know, Photoshop, you know, kind of like those early days of like Macs and Photoshop and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like such an old man. But yeah, kind of early days of digital stuff. And then so that was just, it's, you know, I guess in the early days I used to do like design iron-on transfers and then like we just get some t-shirts and then, you know, we just iron on the prints on the t-shirts and then, you know, we just use those. So maybe that in a weird way was a bit of a precursor to Morvello, even though there was no plan to do any bike related thing then. It was just to go into a design consultancy. That was it.
So what age were you when you started playing around with the t-shirts then, doing the iron-ons?
18, 19.
Okay, so while you're at uni, basically.
Yeah.
Was that supplement income or just because you wanted t-shirts with cool stuff on?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, basically. There'd be a brand. Well, I think it's, because I really liked, you know, Spooky as a brand back then, like with the metal head and stuff. I just loved it. And the Project X and stuff. And I just wanted to have a Spooky t-shirt, but I couldn't find a good Spooky t-shirt. So, or even if they did one. So I just basically, you know, designed one myself and ironed it on probably quite badly, but you know, so, but yeah, that's how it started.
Makes sense. And so you went from uni, did you go straight into a graphic design job from uni?
I did. Yeah. Like a kind of a media company that did kind of postcards, but they kind of worked with, big names like kind of Nike and VW. And so I think that gave me a bit of an insight into kind of working with brands that are kind of in the mainstream popular culture.
Nice.
And then that moved to, when I moved to Brighton and got a job in Brighton, a design consultancy again that did lifestyle, entertainment and sports stuff.
Right.
And that's where I met Dave, who's my business partner at Morvello. So we worked at a design consultancy together. And a lot of the stuff, Dave did a lot of work with skating, surfing and snowboard brands. That was his background. So he brought O'Neill, the surfing company, with him. So we did, lots of work for O'Neill. So a lot of our design work was in, you know, what used to be called, I guess, action sports or extreme sports. And that's kind of what's, informed Morvello really today. But so that's how it started, design consultancy for those kind of brands.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool job then, working on O'Neill stuff, living in Brighton by the seaside. Just be pretty happy with that at that point.
It was cool, yeah. It's good to see you kind of, you know, especially when you're doing artwork and design for events that are then over in, like, north coast of Scotland or California or Australia. That's pretty cool.
Did you get to travel to those events as well?
No. Actually, no, we did go to a snowboard one when it was like in Avoriaz. Like some of their snowboarding ones we did.
Yeah.
But the surfing ones, I don't think they wanted to fly us out across the world.
That's a shame. That is a shame. So yeah, so obviously you've met Dave at that point. How did you guys end up deciding to do something together? Tell us a little bit about where More Velo came from.
Well, we worked together at a design company that then we'd been there 5 years, and then that was 2008. The company went bust.
Right.
So me and Dave and the other designers, the whole design, company folded. So me and Dave were just, we still had the close links with O'Neill. And me and Dave quite often were the designers working on it. So we just had a plan of, well, let's just, do our own thing and just keep working for O'Neill. So we just did that, kept working for O'Neill and had a few other well, computer game design, with websites and marketing around computer games. So again, it's all in the, popular culture mainstream. And then we just, the financial crisis 2008 started to kind of hit. So we lost a lot of O'Neill work because they were just stopping doing any, freelance work. So we were like, well, what are we going to do now? So, I'd always, still riding, still into bikes. And I just thought, well, why, we're doing all this stuff for surfing and snowboarding and skating, but why don't we do what we're doing for them for, cycling, because that's kind of what I do the whole time. So that's where More Velo started, really. I had the idea in 2008, and then we did t-shirts because that was the easiest thing to get our designs onto. It's nice and straightforward. And then we, just launched More Velo at the first Brighton Big Dog in 2009, I think it was.
So that's a big, endurance mountain bike event for people that aren't familiar.
I mean, like,
Quite laid back and good fun.
it's kind of like quite an outdated format now, but it's still like really popular. But it's just old school, like almost like a mountain bike event in the old school kind of mold, So yeah, very laid back, cross country, because it's just based on, down in the local woods and Stanley Park. So yeah, we just sold some t-shirts there, and there was like no grand plan at all. It was just
So this was just a bit of your own money, kind of bought a few t-shirts and
That's basically
had
it.
a bit of a go, basically.
And then I was doing more cross country racing, like 24-hour racing at that time. So, and so I was wearing like Lycra kit, and I just thought, well, we were doing a team of four, and I just thought, well, we've got this new brand, More Velo, I should be wearing, we should all be wearing like More Velo. And the other people on the team were keen to, wear More Velo stuff. They didn't mind me muscling in there. So yeah, I got some jerseys made and some shorts made with More Velo on them, and because I had to make 30 jerseys, I think, to reach the minimums, I had to kind of sell them to friends in Brighton, so and then we had to make, there'd be times where you think, well, actually I could do with a gilet or a rain jacket. So then we design a rain jacket and then sell them to friends in Brighton to help cover those costs. And so, and it's pretty much been that way. Obviously not just selling to friends in Brighton, otherwise they'd have so much kit they wouldn't know what to do. But essentially More Velo has been that way for 10 years. We've just, self-funded, we've made stuff, we've sold it, the money comes back into the company, we make more stuff, there's, yeah, it's just self-financed organic growth. So no funding, just kind of like a grassroots sort of company, really.
Where did the name More Velo come from?
That was it was I just wanted to have a name that was probably like unique in Google, that was a bit different and no one could quite pigeonhole where it was from. I was doing a bit of road cycling at the time, and it's kind of, so that's, Velo, the French word for bike. The thought, well, at least it's, there's an abundance of Velo out there now. So, But at the time there wasn't, and we just thought, well, we wanted it to be about more bikes. You know, we're not, we started mountain biking, but then we did road cycling and cross and track and BMX. It was like our motto is ride everything. It's all about, if you're into bikes, you know, every bike brings a different journey. So yeah, essentially like more bikes, but take the E off, try and make it look a bit unusual, yeah. You know, make sure, like, if you put it into Google, it didn't come up with anything. So yeah, that, it's kind of just stemmed from there, really.
Yeah. And did you have like a vision for it at the start, or has it just been so organic in its nature that it, that wasn't there right from the beginning? Like, what did you set out to achieve, I guess?
I would probably say we haven't really had a vision. Well, we had a vision, but we didn't have, there's kind of, you know, been no grand plan apart from just doing designs that we really like, because we're graphic designers first and foremost. So it's to do designs we really like, we're really proud of, that we feel moves cycle clothing in a way that is a bit more accessible to people, and also to make bike riding a little less serious, I guess. Kind of want to represent the fun side of it, you know. Yeah. It's not all high level sport and, you know, racing. It is just essentially bikes are a toys that, you know, you're still accessing that inner child of just messing around on, whether that's, you know, road or mountain bike. So yeah, there's not really been a grand plan, really, and I think that's because we don't have investment. So then you don't have investors demanding to see a return in 3, 5, 10 years. It's basically the decision making process will just be me and Dave going, hey, what do you think of this design, or should we do that? And we go, yeah, let's go for it.
And is that the main reason you haven't gone down that venture capital route, is because you wanted to retain that freedom to kind of react and do what works for you? Or
yeah, I mean, that is, you know, we have looked at investment. It is a concern that it might stifle what more velo is in some way. Yeah. It might remove a bit of enjoyment from it. You know, it's, you know, it is a serious business. You know, me and Dave, it's because it's self-financed, mine and Dave's houses are, you know, on the line, you know, so it is serious, but you still want to make it a fun thing to do, and you still want to, I don't know, further, I just kind of want to further cycling as a thing that people want to be into. I think that's our defined focus now, is to make cycling that really cool thing that the people on the street will just see and think, actually, yeah, I kind of want to be, this looks good fun.
Yeah.
So you don't want to look too kind of, yeah, too kind of sporty. Just want to look kind of like, you know, look a bit cooler.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Where do your design influences come from? Obviously you've got that background in surf and skate and stuff, and then a growing up in the 80s BMX sort of vibe.
Yeah, comes from, I mean, we don't, so me and Dave have had to separate our roles a little bit, because having two designers doing two lots of graphic design doesn't make sense in a company of like four, which is, we've got four full-time people and two part-time, so we're still tiny. So Dave leads all the graphics and I lead the product development. And yeah, because Dave rides to work each day, but his background is, you know, he's a lifelong skater. So he looks at, well, basically a lot of kind of streetwear lifestyle sort of brands, you know, like the likes of kind of Carhartt, Stussy, you know, any of those kind of ones which kind of look to do things a bit differently, kind of quite youth culture inspired. But then we look at high street fashions as well. We try and make our clothing appeal, you know, if you've bought something from the high street or from a more kind of a brand that's not involved in cycling, that is that, you know, it could be a lifestyle brand, it could be like a Carhartt, for example, but why would you then need to wear something in a different style just to go cycling? You know, just because you're riding a bike doesn't mean you should then have to wear something in a different style to you wear every day. So that's where we're going with it. We kind of look at, we don't look at cycling, you know, brands at all, because then if you did happen to see something that another brand was doing, you can't help be sucked into kind of going, oh, that looks cool. And you just do what would be a weak version of it. You know, you need to do something original. And you say you need to look outside of cycling to find those influences in, yeah, in pop culture, and then pull them into cycling and look to do something a bit, yeah, a bit different.
Yeah, so you've always looked to, I guess, to stand out from the rest of the cycle clothing world.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We kind of, I'd say we're happy to be a niche brand in a way. You know, we want to be that kind of brand which does things differently that people go to when they are bored with the mainstream. So it's, if you see someone in Morvello, I want people to think, oh, there's like a an independently minded person who's willing to do something differently than just follow the herd, basically.
Yeah.
Kind of like almost want to kind of increasingly embrace our almost a bit like an outsider status. You know, it's just like you have the established players, and the Morvello stuff should be the one where it's a bit more of like the kind of like, yeah, the angry relative.
Yeah, so I guess interestingly, your background is predominantly in the mountain bike side of things, although, like you say, you ride all kinds of different bikes. The road side has almost become what Morvello has been better known for, and it's been that maybe kind of thinking differently and being wanting to stand out or be different from all of your mates and have some kit that no one else has got, that's caught on through the road side, maybe more so than as in the mountain bike side of things. Why do you think that is? What's been the challenge to take that ethos into the mountain bike world?
Yeah, it is quite strange, really, because, you know, I consider myself a mountain biker who then, you know, I do ride road bikes and have raced them and cross bikes and track bikes. It's, yeah, but mountain biking is what got me into cycling. And yeah, it's strange, really, because a lot of people know us through the road stuff. And that is whether because, I don't know, road cycling had that boom, you know, after the Olympics. And strangely, it's always confused me a little bit, because road cycling should be like the more conservative side of cycling. So people should, in theory, want to just follow what everyone else does. Whereas actually in road cycling, you've got loads of small companies, small like ourselves, who do interesting graphics and jerseys and are really creative. And it's always confused me that really mountain biking should be like that, because mountain biking is all about, you know, the individual. It's not a team sport. It's like people get into mountain biking because they want to go mess around in the woods, you know. That's what initially hooks people into it, or go jumping or just it, or race, you know. It's not, so it should be that mountain biking should have all these small companies, because it has that creative, independently minded spirit, but it doesn't, in a weird way. So yeah, it's always been a bit of a confusion. So we've kind of do road stuff, but actually it's always been, you know, it's always been a challenge where I kind of want to do more mountain bike stuff, but it's, people are quite beholden to established brands in mountain biking and are a little bit either unwilling to let that go. They kind of just want to stick with what they know and what their friends are riding with, and maybe what the pros are riding with, and feel either afraid or unwilling to kind of make that step out to wear something different.
Yeah, yeah, it makes it tricky. I mean, you've got the two big guns, I guess, at Fox and Troy Lee in the mountain bike clothing world. How do you approach competing with or being in the same market as people like that, that have got huge amounts of, I guess, venture capital, lots of money to play with, big sponsorship dollars and big, yeah, like you say, lots of pro riders on the kit. Like, what, how do you approach being in that market?
Yeah, I mean, it is super tough. I think the apparel market is just a really hard one. It's just like, I think if I had the benefit of hindsight, that I might not have actually set up a clothing company, because it's you know, we've kind of, me and Dave accidentally ended up, you know, accidentally ended up where we are. We just started with t-shirts and no grand plan, but we've ended up with a clothing company, which is great. We know we do love it, but it is very challenging and really tough. So a Fox and a Troy Lee, they have, or an Endura, you know, retailers around the world, high volumes, they can negotiate great prices with suppliers. They can sell that product then for really competitive rates, you know, which is really hard for a small brand like ourselves to do. It's kind of, we're kind of getting to that point now with our, you know, our new range of jerseys for spring summer is kind of, I think they're super affordable and something quite different. But it's taken us a long time to get there, and I can see why a lot of companies find it difficult, especially when you're self-funded as well, because you can't just take a punt on something because you don't have the capital to throw into a project. And it's also a bit frustrating then, because, you know, you can't, likewise, you don't have the money to then give to the riders, the pro riders who then can support you. So we've had some, you know, some great ones in the past, you know, Katie Winton, who raced for us, and Lachlan Blair as well. And they're just, you know, perfect, you know, ambassadors for us, because they're like super enthusiastic, have that kind of carefree attitude. But understandably, you know, they need to progress themselves. So, you know, Katie going to Trek Factory Racing, you know, and Lachlan going to the Dudes of Hazzard team and stuff. And, you know, we spoke to the Dudes of Hazzard guys about doing their team, but we just don't have the money to put into it. So it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to kind of further yourself, really. It'll, you know, I think it will come, but it takes time. It just takes time for people to see the brand and see what it's about and be willing to do something different.
Yeah, and you've had some success within the mountain bike world with the products. Yeah, your mountain bike short won, I think it was a mountain bike in UK, like best in test product.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, we're so pleased with that, because it's, you know, you're developing a product from scratch, and that's completely in our vision of, you know, the rise and descend shorts, which essentially we just wanted to call the rad shorts, but we just had to figure out some sort of name to kind of, you know, we just thought the name, it needs to say rad on the shorts, you know, and we'll figure out the name later.
Good so, work.
But actually then we did think about it, because they're called rise and descend because we wanted to make a short that was pretty lightweight, so you could ride cross country in it, but then tough enough to race downhill in it. So we stripped off all the vents and, you know, unnecessary Velcro attachments, keep it super pared back. And that's what MBUK really likes about it. It's kind of like just purely functional without any of the bells and whistles that you don't need. And it's just really cool to see. So you had like Lachlan race it in the World Cups, and then we've had someone ride 3,000 kilometres around Tibet on it. So it's kind of, you know, so it's really nice. You know, we've had those shorts for, I don't know, maybe 4 years now. So, and it's just starting to get that traction.
Okay.
You know, again, yeah, it takes a while to, we can shout about it for as long as we want, but, you know, it's going to just take people a while to kind of, because we're not sponsoring pro riders or teams, it's going to take people a while to try and find us.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you've had some very competent riders on the product, but how do you guys approach product testing? What does that cycle look like?
It's normally kind of have an idea. I mean, I definitely use myself a lot in the product testing. So I'm riding to work every day, and yeah, I mean, that is normally road in the winter, mountain bike in the summer. But we take a product, and the other sportswear designer, Martin, he's, you know, been a lifelong mountain biker too. So we normally have a vision for a product. We try and find a fabric that's going to fulfill its aim. So like the rad shorts was, you know, lightweight with stretch, needs to be tough. And then we just make it into products, ride in it, you know, send it to riders, get their feedback. And it's normally, again, we don't have like a pro team. So it's a lot of friends, friends of friends. But then actually with products, you know, if you're giving it to people like ourselves, you know, I've been riding mountain bikes, you know, since I was 13 and I'm 42 now. So that's, I feel that's, you know.
You're qualified.
Yeah, you know, yes, I'm not on podiums, you know, in downhills and in EWS or anything. But, you know, I feel like between the team of us and also the, you know, so we kind of bring the experience, I guess, but then we also give it to, you know, younger riders on our test team who will feedback on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Normally actually finds out we're normally pickier than the younger riders. You know, I think that's how it is.
Yeah, they're just stoked for a new bit of kit.
Yeah, whereas us, you go, I don't know, this needs to be longer, this needs to have a bit more stretch, whereas sometimes the younger riders are just like, yeah, great, it's, you know, all right and whatever, you know. But, yeah, so we kind of, and especially with this new range that we've got at the moment, our mountain bike jerseys, we wanted to, you know, change it to something that was, yeah, a bit more, I don't know, taps into an old school kind of approach, motorbike, BMX kind of mesh jersey that has a bit more of a, I don't know, a bit less of a sports feel, more of a kind of a light, cool lifestyle feel, but it's still like a technical riding top. It's still, you know, breathes, wicks sweat away, dry super quickly, but just looks a bit more normal with jeans and stuff, a bit less, you know, like saying like racing pajamas, you know, it's just something a bit more like rough and ready. And then it means that because of that, we can sell it at a better price. And then that's kind of like really reinvigorated our product development, is just when you get that focus. I think we saw like a top that Stussy had done and we're just like going, but that's just like, that's like an old school, you know, BMX jersey, and they're doing it. And it's just, so that kind of really reinvigorated our whole design process of just finding the fabric and then thinking, well, if you're doing that, then we should just need to do some designs that are kind of based on this kind of old school approach. And so our whole spring summer range has a bit of a kind of like a slight retro vibe to it, I think. Which we, yeah, it's really, I don't know, most excited about it that we've been for a long time, I think.
Cool. And you've followed that through with your new Overland range. It's got like a, for me anyway, when I see the product and the images, it reminds me of the repack photos that you see of like Gary Fisher and those guys on the old clunkers back in the day, going way too fast down fire roads on bikes that didn't stop and probably weren't very stable.
Talk
us through a little bit about that, because I think it's pretty, it feels fairly unique in the mountain bike world, that range.
It's definitely, it kind of came about because I was I don't know, I think I was just getting to a point of getting a bit tired, for like feeling like I was having to kind of kiss that to go for a ride. So it's probably about 3 years ago, going back from work, and in the summer, you know, you just want to make the most of the summer evenings and you want to go out do riding after work in the evenings. But then I wanted to go straight from work out to the trails. So I needed to be at work in riding kit, ready to go out. And I'm sitting there just thinking, like, I'm looking like I'm just in like a start gate for something, and I'm just like behind my Mac, and I'm just thinking, this just feels a bit wrong. And it feels right when you're on the bike, but then you get back home and it, you know, as soon as you're off the bike, you just feel a bit wrong again. It just feels like, you know, the mountain bike shorts might feel great on the bike, but as soon as you're off it, you feel like you're from the 90s. And it's just like, I'm not sure that was, I just kind of thought, there's got to be a different way of approaching this. So so I did a lot of riding in just kind of inappropriate clothing, like jeans and just, you know, shirts and stuff. And then just to give me an idea about how that might feel to go riding in it. And then we did a technical version of that. So a shirt that we have in the Overland range is, it's designed to feel and look like a normal shirt, but it has stretch and fabrics that make it breathe and wick sweat away. So it's kind of, it is very definitely a riding top, but it just looks like a shirt. But you'll look completely normal at work and not like someone who's, you know, ready to go out for a ride. And at the same time, that just tied into this idea that maybe riding should be a bit, you know, easier to do. So why can't you just, you know, a lot of friends took up running because they said, well, bike riding's a bit too much like hard work. You know, you've got to get back and get changed and put your rucksack on. And but I was just thinking, but with bikes these days and tubeless, and you know, if you're going out for an hour, you're only going to be half an hour away from home maximum. So why can't you just get back, you know, especially if you're running flats as well, then you don't even have to change your shoes. You just like put a helmet on and then you're straight out the door. Don't even need to take any water. You know, chances are if you get a puncture, tubeless will probably get you home. And because of that, then that removes the need to kind of dress up in, you know, cycle specific clothing. You know, it could just freeze you up to do something a bit different. And then that kind of then morphed into, I think like looking at kind of like a bit of a like a pre-digital nostalgia for like those early days of mountain biking. You know, you just think it's just, I don't know, a bit more kind of when the time of when it was just less attitude, it's just, you know, everything was just like, you could just be on a fire road, like you said, with like a bike that doesn't even stop. And like, you know, I've been down the Repack as well, and that was just like on a, you know, modern mountain bike, and it just feels like you're riding on ball bearings. So how they managed to do it on, you know, on clunkers, you know, it must be terrifying. But yeah, just wanted to kind of re-inject a kind of an old school vibe into riding clothing. So that's kind of where we are with Overland. You know, it does tie into this kind of trend as well for gravel, which is like a friend once said, it's kind of like old school mountain biking. You know, it's kind of that gravel is almost like an old school mountain bike approach, really. So it kind of, yeah, it kind of dovetails in quite a few different ways. But I feel like with the hoodies as well, well, they look like a hoodie, but we call them a jersey because they're designed to be worn as a jersey. So it, again, it looks quite casual. You can wear it with jeans, but actually it's still breathable and pockets that you can stash stuff in, and a hood that kind of acts like a glass wipe and a kind of, so it's, that's the premise, is to make clothing with Overland that you can go riding in, but you're just always just going to look normal, like a normal person.
Yeah, so you can step off the bike, walk into a pub, and no one's going to look at you funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
And just do it, we looked a lot of, you know, there's a big trend for like small outdoors brands, especially in the States, and they do like some really cool stuff, and these are people who are out and about outdoors, and we just thought, well, you know, there should be a place for cycle clothing to be like that. You know, why? Because fundamentally all of us like riding our bikes because we like being outdoors and messing about, and I think the clothing needs to reflect that. And you don't see, you know, I'm seeing it in like climbing stuff and things like that. People like these small climbing brands coming out with like really cool looking stuff that's brilliant for climbing, but just doesn't look like, you know, old school climbing wear. So I feel like, yeah, the Overland range, especially for autumn winter, we've got things like coach jackets and, you know, over the head kind of, I think, you know, you call them like anoraks, but it's kind of like looking at what, yeah, brands like, you know, Carhartt and stuff like that are doing in streetwear, but you're doing like an old school version for cycling. So it kind of, everything has this kind of slight retro vibe.
Yeah. And not overtly branded. Like, I guess a lot of cycle clothing, it's big logos and it's very clear kind of what you're riding. Whereas this is a lot more subtle. And
yeah, this should, to the casual observer, if you're out riding your bike, this should just look like you're just wearing, you know, normal kit.
Civvies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And you, like you said, you don't like riding with a pack particularly. You've put quite a lot of focus on how you carry kit within your riding clothing. Tell us a bit about your approach to that.
Yeah, I think that it kind of stemmed, I think, from, now this is from someone who, when I raced cross country, and I had, I was riding, I think my old Santa Cruz Chameleon, and I had like Bomber Z1 Duels, and I was doing like the local like Gorick race series, and because it had like a bolt through, you know, before the days of having a nice quick release bolt through, you know, I had to carry two adjustable spanners with me, you know, on like a kind of a, you know, a 3 mile cross country race. So I am someone who's familiar with over, you know, carrying too much kit with me. But then when I did a lot of road cycling and then was back on the mountain bike, I was just thinking, I just hate, you know, I just enjoy the freedom of not riding without a pack, of riding without a pack. So we developed the Covert series, which was kind of bib shorts with pockets that you kind of wear under your baggies, and also the Covert base layer, which had three pockets at the back, two at the front. And then that kind of morphed, the Covert products morphed into Overland. So it's very much the Overland Dual we do now is a, it's kind of like a base layer, but we make it fit like a close fitting jersey. So, and it's designed to be worn under the shirts and under the hoodie. So you can carry all the stuff you need to, again, like with tubeless, you don't really need to, you know, you can carry all your essentials pretty much in the pockets,
yeah.
But you don't have, you know, a pack. And this is even as far as like, you know, kind of like a waist pack as well. It's just trying to remove, if you're carrying stuff, I feel it needs to be fitted close to the body so it doesn't, you know, bob around and move. And also as well, it needs to, I don't know, sound like a bit obsessed with appearance, but again, I just like, you know, with a backpack, it feels like, you know, look, everyone, I'm going on an adventure in the wild. And it just feels a bit too much like you're making an effort. Whereas if you can put stuff into pockets that are on a base layer or shorts that are hidden, then not only, I don't know, it just frees up your riding as well. You don't have any kind of constraints with it kind of like knocking onto the back of your helmet or, you know, across the shoulders. It just...
It's less sweaty as well, I think. Like, yeah. I always find it really sweaty riding in a pack.
And it just feels like, again, like a bit more old school fun, you know. I don't think the early days when I was going out mountain biking, I'd be, you know, well, pre Z1 Duels, obviously, my two adjustables. You know, I'd just be going out with like a bottle and I might have a saddle pack full of tools and I'd probably get stuck somewhere, you know. But I don't know, just feels a bit more... bit more carefree.
Yeah. So I guess that packless thing is one of the trends in the mountain bike world at the moment. But what, in the clothing side of things specifically, what do you think are some of the key trends that we'll see over the next couple of years in mountain bike clothing?
I think, because you'll still have, you know, I think it's, you know, the kind of, I think the Fox Troy Lee approach will still be there. You know, I think that's still, you know, that'll always be in demand because, like with, you know, I think the race scene is always, you know, that trickle down of technology, certainly on bikes. And so, you know, and it's a great spectacle as well. So I think, and there'll always be people who want to wear the stuff that, you know, the pros are riding in. So I think that will be there. But I think the, you know, the innovations are going to come, well, I probably would say this, but I think it's going to come from things like Overland. I think there's going to be more brands that start to appear and do products with, and I think this is actually, I think e-bikes is the driving force behind this, because
okay.
I think e-bikes, everyone who I've met who's ridden an e-mountain bike has, and that's, this is people who have been at it for years, and there's even people who have just wouldn't even consider themselves mountain bikers who have ridden an e-bike, and they come back and they're just going, this is just like so much fun, you know, like you're braking for corners going uphill, and it's just like, and I think that is bringing a whole new, whole different crowd of people into mountain biking. And I think it's changing. Because of that, they're bringing a fresh perspective to things as well. So, you know, they're not coming at it from, they might not be coming at it from a downhill racing side. They're just be coming at it from a, this bike's just awesome for being, you know, ragging around the woods.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're coming from, they might be buying things like, I don't know, like Patagonia stuff or, you know, things like that. And so I think the development's going to be this kind of middle ground. It's going to be this kind of wave of people who are like coming into mountain biking through e-bikes as well, will bring together like a new direction for clothing, which is like more casual. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you get it in running and other sports, you know, there's this whole, you know, it's a terrible term, but, you know, athleisure, which, you know,
I've never heard that word before.
Oh, God, it's just awful. It makes you just think of, like, you know, mums and yoga trousers, yoga pants. But it's a thing that, you know, you kind of, we kind of always hear about on trend forecasts and stuff, and it doesn't really necessarily apply to cycling at the moment, but, you know, it is a trend. It's basically the fusion of leisure stuff and athletic stuff. That's basically it. It's kind of like stuff that's functional from a workout point of view, but it just looks, you just wear it around on the high street, and it's kind of like that's prevalent in things like running and climbing and all sorts, really, but not in cycling yet. And I think that's going to be the next kind of wave, really. And the exciting thing then is I think it goes from, it becomes less cycle specific. It's kind of like, it will be, you know, it can be taken up a bit more probably by mountain bikers first, because they're more used to, you know, riding in t-shirts and hoodies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then I think it'll kind of morph across into, yeah, kind of gravel and road, and people just go, well, I don't want to go full aero.
You know? It's just kit.
Yeah.
Cool. So like you said, it's, if you maybe had your chance again, you might not have gone into the clothing business. It's obviously a challenging space to be in. But what's been the hardest part for you guys about getting to where you are now with Morvelo?
Yeah, it's, I feel like it's been a real, I know the expression, like, you know, it's just like learn by your mistakes. But, you know, it really feels that way with like Morvelo. I think it's, we started Morvelo as graphic designers just doing t-shirts that, you know, they're just off the shelf blanks, you know, t-shirts that you can just print designs onto. And now we're doing stuff which, like the Overland, is, yeah, it's completely bespoke. It's taken, you know, years to develop and find fabrics and tune the fit and test, and, you know, and then, you know, it's, yeah, even myself, I find myself like, any new bit of clothing, I'm flipping it inside out and looking at the stitching and testing the fabric and how it stretches. And but it's it's a real challenge, because clothing is like super competitive. It's, I think if you run a bike brand or a component brand, you can design that product, you know, say, and then sure, you can refine it over time and improve it a little bit, but essentially you have that product in the lineup. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. You might, if it's a bike, you know, you might have a few different colours and a different spec, but fundamentally it's the same. You know, with clothing, the jersey is the same and you have different designs on it. But it's, some of those designs are going to be bestsellers, some aren't, but you never know. And it's purely based on taste as well. I mean, function too, but it's also based on taste, and it's, so you're constantly having this kind of fluctuating gamble of where you're never quite sure what's gonna work. You just have to kind of base it on gut instinct.
Yeah.
And especially when you're doing that when you're self-funded, it's kind of quite a scary proposition. You have to kind of be quite bold and brave, and probably a little bit, you know, stupid, because it's, you know, I just always look at friends who run bike companies and component companies, and I just have a certain amount of, like, you know, oh, it looks a little bit easier. I know it's not, because they're developing, you know, it's a harder thing for them to develop too. But with clothing, it just changes so rapidly. You know, we do a new range every 6 months, so the design process is just ongoing. It's like feeding a monster. It's just like, it's constantly hungry, like new designs, fine-tuning the fabrics, changing the fit. It's a real eye-opener. And then because of clothing being what it is, you know, people might have less value to it. They might just go, well, it's just clothing, you know, so I might not attribute, you know, so much value to it. So you might have to battle quite hard for someone to spend £45 on a jersey, but then they'll spend £1,000 on wheels, you know. So it's kind of...
It's almost sometimes a bit of an afterthought.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of it's a challenge, but then it's, you know, I'd be, you know, but I wouldn't be suited to be doing, you know, design. If you want to see a truly awful handling bike, it's probably getting me to design it, because it might hopefully look great, but probably, you know, I don't have the engineering skills to do that.
Right.
But so very much more velo is in mine and Dave's skill set.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of doing what I think we're good at.
Yeah, cool. So what advice would you guys give then to anyone thinking about starting a brand within the bike industry, other than don't do clothing?
Yeah, I think it's a hard one, really, because I mean, clothing is a natural, easy route in, because you can just do t-shirts.
Yeah.
And you don't have to buy lots of stock to do it. You know, and I guess you could do components, you know, you can source stuff that's kind of from the Far East that's almost there, that you can kind of just fine tune a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think really it's finding, you need to find your kind of voice. It's like, well, what is it that's going to make you buy, you know, buy this clothing? And sometimes it takes a bit of time. I feel like with Morvello, it's only recently we've got there with Overland stuff and the new mountain bike range. It feels like, you know, our voice is to be that brand where people go to when they want something different. And I think if someone's starting out, they just need to have that, a bit of a focus. You'll definitely have the drive to do it, because invariably you've got into it because you love bikes, and that does kind of like weirdly give you a bit of a superhuman charge, because you're constantly designing for yourself. You're constantly thinking, well, I love bikes, I want this to be this way.
Yeah.
Because I think this will do a really good job. And yeah, I think it's just having that bravery as well to just go, it should be this way, and just follow your gut instincts. I think I think where we've gone wrong in the past is when we've tried to design by numbers. You think, well, it should be like this, or this color, or this fit, because that kind of feels like it makes sense. If your gut feeling is like saying, no, don't do it that way, just don't do it. Just do something where your gut feeling goes, yeah, it should be this way, and then just do that.
Yeah, and that you feel like you've got to that point with the range this year. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Like with the mountain bike stuff, we completely started from scratch. You know, we ditched flatlock stitching, we ditched all these, you know, I would say, you know, unnecessary technical features on the mountain bike jerseys. You know, we ditched, you know, any pockets and things like that. We just wanted to run a good looking jersey that was affordable, that you could wear on and off the bike. And that was the premise to it. And it's weird, like by ditching those constraints, suddenly it frees up the creativity. And then you suddenly go, oh yeah, this is just, why didn't we think about doing this before? So suddenly then it, you know, unleashes a kind of a whole new wave of enthusiasm, which is yeah, why we do it.
Nice. Yeah. So out of the new range, what's your favourite piece and why?
I think the long sleeve mountain bike jerseys at the moment, I think just because they've got that really cool mix of fashion and performance.
Yeah.
In terms of designs of which ones are those, I'm always a sucker for the Speed Shop one, because it's got checkerboard on it, and I love Vans, and I just still love that old school, you know, it's a cliche, but it's a good cliche, and I love that design.
You obviously like a sleeve print as well, because you sat here in a Beastie Boys t-shirt with it all down the sleeve.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you can probably see the influence. It'd just be like, you know, yeah, so actually a lot of our long sleeve tech tees have sleeve prints and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Again, it's looking at fashion. You know, sleeve prints are, long sleeve t-shirts and sleeve prints are right back in, so we do that. But then also the Overland stuff, you know, that to me is like the hoodies and the shirts are, you know, are just, you know, it just feels really good to go riding in it, because you just feel like, yeah, you're riding on kind of like a stealth kind of thing. It's just like you just go past, you know, I don't know, walkers or other people out and about, and they just will never realise you're just kind of, you know, you just look like you're out just bombing around.
Yeah,
yeah. Cool. So that's, yeah, that I'm I think those kind of three products are the ones I'm really most pleased with.
Good stuff. All right, well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got our three famous questions. So we'll hit those up and then we'll be done.
Cool.
First one of those, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, and it's not spending it on more Velo clothing this time, what would you recommend they spend it on and why?
£150.
It's not a lot, is it, in these days and times?
No, I was going to say, because, I mean, obviously, like, you know, you get the big difference through wheels, but you're not going to get any wheels for £150. But it would probably, I mean, it would probably be, can you get, like, I mean, the most transformative product I think I've had is a dropper post.
Yeah.
You know, so that to me is like the mountain bike invention that is just like, you know, oh, it just makes every bike like awesome.
Yeah, totally. So
if you could squeeze in a dropper post for 150, that'd be it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's a few people doing them for that. Yeah. Question number two then, if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him?
Don't start a clothing company.
It's turned out all right so far.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, no, it has been good. I think just, the advice would just be just follow your instincts. I think it's just like, I met a friend who I hadn't seen for 20 years and she said to me, it's good to see you're doing, you know, more Velo, because when I knew you from the age of like 5, you just like drawing and playing on bikes. And that's kind of what more Velo has ended up being, essentially. So I think as a 16-year-old, I'd probably just say to myself, just, you know, yeah, just kind of keep on going and just actually probably pay more attention to maths. Because no matter how much, you know, I love the design side of it, fundamentally, it's a business that needs, you know, a lot of spreadsheets and maths.
Yeah,
and,
you know, can't avoid it, can you?
So I'll probably, yeah, tell myself to like pay a bit more attention in maths class.
All right, good stuff. And then the final question, if you could have a coaching session with anyone, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
I mean, I'm naturally skewed towards the old school. I still think John Tomac is just that all-rounder ability. You know, yeah. It's not really a particularly innovative one to say, but Tomac, I think, just had, you know, the style and the ability to kind of like, you know, downhill, cross country, just like awesome all-round ability. But also the fact he was on, you know, like mountain bike and road bike, and, you know, he's a perfect epitome of that kind of ride everything mentality.
Yeah, he definitely was doing everything and had disc wheels and all that kind of stuff, like some cool bikes.
So cool. Like, some of his jumps, and he's on, like, you know, just like, it's only when you get back on an old school mountain bike now you realise how sketchy they are. And he's doing, like, you know, big jumps on drop bars. Yeah. On, like, you know, you just think that's just...
I remember seeing him at Newnham Park at the World Cup many, many years ago. And there's a section called the Pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
Like a real steep bit down to the river, I think. And he was the only person that was just launching into the top of that and landing like two-thirds of the way down on this shonky bike. And it was amazing.
He's so good.
A lot of style.
I mean, I did like, you know, I do like, you know, again, like Sean Palmer's approach for just completely just, you know, everyone was very much in that kind of like, you know, team kit mentality. And Sean Palmer came along again because he's coming from a snowboard side. He just brought a whole wave of just like, you know, what are you doing? Let's do it this way.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like, you know, having those, a coaching session, you know, oh, will you be coaching me in? Probably just being like, you know, wayward, but it'd still be
being a
beneficial.
Badass.
Yeah. Mixture two of them, you get like the John Tomac kind of super pro all round ability, and then the Sean Palmer kind of, yeah, badass kind of mentality.
Yeah, sounds fun. That'd be a good day out, the three of you. Be all right, mate.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Yeah, it'd be really good.
Nice one. Cool. Well, good stuff. It's been super interesting chatting and finding out a bit more about More Velo. If people want to check it out, where should they head?
Yeah, morevelo.com.
Yeah.
And then on all the, you know, the usual social media ones, just like if it's Instagram, it's just More Velo, same with Facebook. So hopefully that name that I came up with 10 years ago, it still makes it easy to find. So yeah, morevelo.com. But But then also, yeah, we, you know, through retailers and stuff as well. So,
okay.
You know, Chain Reaction and Treads and all those other ones as well. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah. All right, yeah, we'll stick some links in the show notes so people can find it as well.
Yeah, cool.
All right, nice one. Well, thanks for your time, mate. It's been super interesting. And, yeah, wish you all the best for the new mountain bike range and the Overland stuff. It looks cool.
Yeah, thanks for letting me talk endlessly to you.
It's good.
All right.
Enjoyed it. Cheers, mate.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to Ollie's story and finding out more about what Morvelo do and what it takes to succeed in the bike clothing business. Head over to morvelo.com/MTB, that's Morvelo spelled M-O-R-V-E-L-O, and check out their awesome range. Don't forget, as a downtime listener, you get 25% off all full price products until the 31st of May 2019. All you got to do is use the code DOWNTIME, all uppercase, at the checkout. Please give us a follow on social media, subscribe to the podcast so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. Please keep on telling your friends about the podcast and spreading the word. And if you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review on iTunes or wherever it is you listen. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up real soon. But until then, get out and ride.